Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otto. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Kerry Finch. Kerry Finch is a global communications expert who specializes in crafting positioning and shaping thought leadership. She is co-founder of also known as, aka, Reputation Builders for some of the world's most ambitious creative companies. Kerry is also a speaker, stage MC, and panel moderator with a deep focus on creative innovation and emerging technology. Described as the best MC in the business, she has graced the stages of many international conferences, including the Cannes Lions International Festival of Creativity, Cyclope Berlin, Focus London, the Global Marketing Summit in Istanbul, Step Conference in Dubai, South by Southwest in Austin, and Web Summit in Lisbon. In addition, Kerry is a country rep for Cannes Lions in the Netherlands and the leading insurgent of She Says Amsterdam. Kerry says, do what you love and the passion shines through. You might even be superb at it, which is always an added bonus. Either way, act with heart, spirit, and a great big dollop of integrity. Being funny helps. Kerry Finch, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Hi, thank you for having me. Gosh, it sounds like I'm never home.
Well, that's probably true. So Kerry, doing what you love, is being on stage doing what you love for you?
To be honest, it is, and it came as a surprise. I'm part of a communications reputation building company with my partners based in West Coast, East Coast of the States. And we work with brands, and we work with individuals, we work with, you know, agencies, production companies, you know, and we're focused on thought leadership, we're focused on positioning. And through that work over the years, you know, we get our clients on stages, we get our clients out there shining bright on the stages and live events where they need to be. And over the years, what's happened is I got asked to moderate a panel, or I got asked to, you know, in the end, nowadays I'm emceeing whole conferences for 5 days or whatever it is, like in Cannes Lions this year and last year. And I realized that I just love it, and it comes very easy to me for whatever reason. And so that's where I think about, you know, do what you love. It doesn't have to be hard.
I love that lesson of it doesn't have to be hard, that doing what you love can sometimes feel kind of like a gift. And we met at the Global Marketing Summit in Istanbul last year, where you brilliantly emceed the entire 2-day event. And you talk about getting your customers on stage and helping them shine. What are your top tips for someone who's just dipping their toe in the water of becoming a keynote speaker, i.e. me?
You were very good on stage. And I think what it is prep. Know your stuff. Don't have to worry too much, you know, because I think, okay, I need to make these 12 points, you know, and you don't. You need to make 3. And also, no one has seen your script. So no one knows if you've forgotten something. No one knows if you've gone off-piste. That actually works in your favor, because it helps you to be spontaneous. And I think spontaneity in a presentation is everything, because it brings life and energy to you know what you're talking about. So I think over prep is not great, but I do believe that you have to prep. You have to know what you're going to be talking about and then go off script. It's a bit like drawing and then colouring outside the, you know, outside the lines.
Yeah, that really resonates me with that idea of prepping well, but not obsessively.
Yeah.
And the idea that no one knows if you make a mistake. We've all seen speakers who go, oh, I meant to say, you don't need to.
No, because people are happy, for the most part, people are happy that you're on stage and that you are seen as an expert by the sheer simplicity of the fact that you've been asked to be on stage. You know, there are limited numbers of people at any event. And, you know, in one day, there might be 10 speakers, there might be 20, there might be five. You're one of that very, very small number who's been asked to share your perspective on something. So your perspective is valid. And I think that is really important to remember. People want to hear from you. And for the most part, the audience wants you to do well. They don't want to hear that, oh, I forgot something, or I dropped something, or whatever it is, because that unnerves them. They want to have confidence in you, and they want to see that you are confident, and then the audience will relax. And I think that's really important.
They want to relax and know that they're in a safe pair of hands who's going to take them on some form of journey, however long or however short.
Yes, exactly that. It's a safe pair of hands, and you know, they want to be not impressed necessarily. They want to be awakened. I think that, you know, people are looking for, if you're at a conference, you're looking for knowledge. You're looking for like-minded friends, or you're looking for others who shake you out of your comfort zone. You know, you're looking to be challenged. You're looking for ideas to think differently. And, you know, if you're on stage, you can be one of those things. You know, you can be more than one of those things. And I do think that it isn't great if you over prep. I think, you know, you become rigid. And the worst thing is if you're, you know, reading off a script. That is, you know, you need to be off script, as it were.
Yes, I do remember at work sitting through many an excruciating PowerPoint presentation where people read their PowerPoint for word.
Yeah, it's really painful, because also what happens when people are reading their PowerPoint word for word is you're stumbling over it. You're not reading it at the same pace that someone in the audience might be. And so not it could be a really great PowerPoint, but when you're reading it word for word, it's actually off-putting, because, you know, I and the audience can see what it says on stage. I want you to give it a curveball. You know, you can just make one point. And then the worst thing also, there are many worse things, but not a good thing is if somebody is standing there and facing the screen and reading off the screen, because then you have your back to the audience and it's not a good look.
It's definitely not a good look. Now, Kerry, from the outside, emceeing looks like a really tough gig because you have to be always on. What are the main things you try to remember when you first walk on stage to welcome a new audience?
That's a really great question. I would say that one of the first things is smiling, and one of the first things is also making eye contact with those in the audience, you know, really focus on them. That's important to me, and bringing the energy, you know, and sometimes I can be very high energy because it's your responsibility to be the circus ringmaster. And so I want to make sure that those people going on stage feel comfortable and confident. And I want to make sure that those people in the audience feel included and feel confident in what they're going to see, who they're going to see, and perhaps the whole day. It's that blend of circus ringmaster and almost, you know, sergeant major, because it's not necessarily your responsibility to keep the day on track, because there are stage managers and there's a whole tech team who is there to support the event. You know, you're never working in a bubble, but you are front of house. You know, you are bringing the energy, and you're you're setting the scene, you know, you're representing the conference. And I think that a lot of people forget that. A lot of people think, again, it's a script of, okay, up next is Terry Trouble, and he's going to talk about cats, and then you leave the stage, and actually you don't need to give people a lot of information, you absolutely don't, but you do need to invite them into it, invite them into the conversation, as it were. And so that's what I enjoy doing. I enjoy asking questions of the audience, asking them to put their hands up, asking them to make, you know, cheer or clap, because it wakes them up a bit. You know, perhaps they've seen, you know, 5-10 things already, or perhaps it's the first thing in the morning. So you want to wake them up. You want to know that you're focusing on them, and they want to feel confident that the next person coming up is going to deliver for them.
And I also noticed, Kerry, that you made sure that there was a red thread of connective tissue. So you, when you emceed, you responded to something that the previous speaker said, and you found a way to connect to what the upcoming speaker said. And I love that way of sort of you wove the day together. That must take a lot of concentration.
It takes a lot of concentration, and thank you for noticing. It's really important often, because, you know, a conference or a festival might have a theme, and it could be sustainable productivity, you know, it could be anything. And that is important to help people make the connections, you know, connect the dots. And it does take concentration. You are sitting there all day listening. I mean, it's a privilege, because you're also learning from all these speakers. And if I was at that conference, I wouldn't necessarily sit through 8 speakers. I might choose 3 or 4 and then go and have a meeting with somebody. But so you learn a lot when you're in the room. And I think it's your responsibility to, as often as possible, join the dots.
And how do you keep the energy of doing that for 5 days on the trot?
Oh, gosh. So in Cannes Lions, you know, which is in June, and it's, you know, the advertising and the creative industry's global moment of, it's like the Oscars for the creative industry. And it's in Cannes. 15,000 people attend, you know, there's a lot going on. And inside the Palais, there are a few different stages. And my stage, as I call it, is for about 700 people in the audience, you know. And so it's a big stage. And what I make sure I do is that I arrive the day before, but I also make sure that I've spoken with the stage manager beforehand. I make sure that I go to see the site. Even though I know the stage, I make sure I go to see the site the day before, because then you can see all those people who are working on the stage, the sound people, the audiovisual people, the stage managers. There's many, many people, 20, 30 people behind stages. And I think that when I need to conserve my energy, that's what I need to do. And so I make sure that the day before I'm really as calm and as chilled as possible. And I arrive early on the first day, you know, an hour or so before, and I sit in an empty audience. I want to see what it feels like. And, you know, I have a script, which is my roadmap. It's not a script of words. It's my roadmap. And I make sure, you know, you're always 1 or 2 or 3 steps ahead. You know, don't think about the end of the day. Think about how you join the next 1, 2 or 3 speakers together. And then I just, you know, they're long days at Cannes Lions. You know, you're there from 9:30 to 5:30, and you might have seen 8 speakers. And you know, keeping that energy is exhausting. It really is. And so after that, what I will do is I might meet somebody for a drink or dinner, and then I go home. I do not party. I do not go out. And that's important, because you're on stage. You know, you're on stage. People are looking at you. You are the red thread. And I want to be there to make other people feel comfortable. You know, the speakers going on can be really nervous. And then I'll be there giving them a pep talk. And that's not part of my job, but it's part of being a good human, I think. You know, it's important to me that they feel comfortable because I want them to do a good job, and then the audience feels good, you know, for the next people. So, you know, it's all part of the job. But yes, conserving energy. Oh my goodness.
Kerry, what I'm hearing as you talk, and the parallel that's coming up in my head is, I rarely see it as a parallel to leadership, to leading an organization or a big team, because you're doing that thoughtful prep. You understand the strategy, which is the red thread.
Absolutely.
You're bringing the individuals in who need to shine, but you sort of, you're also engaging with the wider audience. And it's almost like you're living leadership out loud when you MC the way that you do.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. So I used to, you know, I set up my own company and sold it when it was 15 years old. It was three offices in Amsterdam, London, and Los Angeles. You know, we had a team of between 15 and 25 across three offices. And I actually did not enjoy leading. You know, I think I was spread too thin at the time. And I got to the point, you know, 15 years in, where I had some health issues and I stepped away. But I do remember, I do know that at that time, wearing that leadership hat, I found often really uncomfortable. I think I was stretched too thin. When I'm focusing on presenting and being on stage, I know what I'm doing. I've learned, you know, I've gone through a learning curve, I think. And, you know, again, you're either good at leadership or you're not good at leadership. And I'm not sure that managing people is what I like. What I love is representing, you know. So, for example, I represent the Cannes Lions Festival in the Netherlands. I live in Amsterdam. And I represent She Says Amsterdam, which is a global, non-profit, award-winning, you know, organization about giving women a voice and giving women the opportunity to speak on stage. But that's all teamwork, you know. There's a team. And I'm representing, but I'm not managing the team. I mean, there's something very different between the two for me, and I know where my preference is.
Yeah, I can completely see that the representing is more strategic, the managing is more down in the weeds. It's about how you talk to people, how you pay people, how you promote people. There's a strong difference between them. So let's talk about She Says Amsterdam. You say you're the leading insurgent. What are the aims of She Says?
So She Says Amsterdam, I set it up about 15 years ago because She Says has chapters around the world. I think there are more than 50 these days. They do really brilliant work. Non-profit, we don't make any money from it. We do it because we enjoy it and believe in it. And so there's a team of about six of us, and we all take turns in, you know, choosing the subjects and everything. But the whole point basically for us is that we want women to rise. You know, we want women to learn, to educate, to network, to be mentored or to be mentors. And it's about learning from each other. So it's not an organization where women hold the talking stick and, you know, dance their mother's menopause. You know, it's very much about anything and everything. For us, the only rule, I guess, is that it's only women who can take to the stage. It's only women who hold the microphone, or those who, you know, represent themselves as women. And the subject matter could be anything. It might be how do you convince your boss that you need a raise? How do you deal with imposter syndrome? How do you look after your finances? I mean, it could be anything. It's stuff that makes us, you know, makes us tick and is on our minds. And that's really fun because we get people on stage. We might get three or four people at every event on stage, and then we might get 100 to 150 people in the audience, and people love it because they're learning. It's, you know, it's a very small gateway. You know, it's very cheap to come and be part of the event. It's simply to cover costs, but it's about learning and sharing and being part of, again, part of a community. And I think that's what people feel in the room. We do make sure that there's time before and after for people to network, you know. And lots of people might be new to the city. You know, Amsterdam is one of those cities where people of many different nationalities, you know, live here. They move here for their work or for love. And they need connection. You know, they want to connect to people. And She Says Amsterdam is a brilliant place for that. Anybody can come, by the way. It's not just, you know, women in the audience. It's probably about 30% men as well. So, you know, we don't want to be talking in an echo chamber.
Yes. I think it's great that it's there's a low cost to entry.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I've seen with networks for women in Europe, and I looked into a few for myself, particularly ones about accessing board skills.
That, yes, yeah.
The incredible high cost.
And it's really expensive.
It kind of made me furious because yes. I think, so women have been systematically kept out of boardrooms.
Yeah.
Companies want women on their boards because in Europe still, you still have quotas to meet. That's going away in other parts of the world, but it still exists in Europe. And yet the women have to pay.
Yeah, it's what? Crazy. It is really crazy. You know, I actually didn't get involved, as I said, in She Says until about 15 years ago. And I did not want to hold that talking stick. I was one of those people that thought, no, I'm fine. I run a company. You know, I represent businesses. It's all fine. And then I realized that what we were talking about as a, I don't know, 45-year-old or a 50-year-old, oh my goodness, it's the same challenges, you know, represented perhaps in a different color, but it's the same challenges that, you know, you look back that I was facing as a 20-year-old, but just didn't realize I was facing them. And so that's why I just thought, no, it's time. I need to stand up and help and represent and lead. And I really enjoy that. It is bonkers that, you know, we're still talking about equal pay. I cannot get that through my... I can't comprehend how we're still talking about it. It just seems so ridiculously obvious that that needs to happen. And yet it hasn't around the world. Bonkers. You know, so I find it... exactly as you said, you know, people trying to get, you know, equal opportunity or equal access to boardrooms. How do, you know, we... How do we do that? And I've looked into probably quite similar organizations as you and just found that it's, just, you know, I can't be spending that kind of money on an organization which is potentially not even in real life. You know, it's online. And I don't know. I agree with you that there needs to be accessibility at every level, you know, and that also means financial.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Kerry, you've been a long-term entrepreneur and your businesses have always had one common theme, which is reputation and positioning for your own clients.
Yeah.
Do you think about your own reputation? And if so, how?
Oh, I was talking with somebody about it today, actually, because it's the shoemaker's children syndrome, you know, and that's basically how I built my business and how I work with my business partners. You know, you can do a brilliant work and help other people with their positioning and their thought leadership, and yet your own children go barefoot, you know. So, you know, we've only just made a website for our company, you know, after a year. And so things like that. So I do think about my own reputation. I'm much more conscious of it these days because of social media and because of filming and accessibility. I have come to realize that things I say actually resonate with people, which is brilliant, but also therefore I've come to realize that people are listening to what, you know, I say, and it sounds so obvious, but somebody today was saying, you know, was paying me some really nice compliments, and I was shocked and delighted that they remembered, you know, a time when I was on a stage and I was commenting about something, and they were telling me about it and you know, why it was important to them. And I think that it has taken me a while to realize that, sure, I might be the power behind the throne, but I too have a leadership responsibility. If you're on stage, you know, whether it's the Global Marketing Summit, whether it's Cannes Lions, whether it's South by Southwest in Austin, you know, so you're on stage, but whether it's because I'm putting my clients on stages or whether I'm speaking on those stages myself, people are listening, you know. So yes, I take it much more seriously these days.
I was very struck by that story of somebody remembering something that you said months, if not years ago. And I think that that's such a key tenet of reputation, that it comes with quite a large responsibility that you actually touch people's lives.
Yes, and touch people's businesses, you know. And so I can see it so clearly with my clients. You know, the whole point is that CMOs, CEOs, entrepreneurs, you know, that we work with, that's the point, is that we want them to resonate and be remembered and step into their own light, as it were, you know. So what we do is polish the diamond and help them shine in places where they need to shine, help them make connections. What's the point? It's about growth. It's about business development, or it might be about launching yourself into a new position, into a new job, you know, climbing the corporate ladder. So when it comes to my own clients, I think it's clear. I work in a particular way and always have done. That's my job. When it comes to myself, it sounds so stupid, but it really was a slow learn for me that my own voice has impact. And maybe that's about imposter syndrome. Maybe that's about just not focusing on myself enough. And, you know, I'm in my 50s now, and I think I have a different attitude to what responsibility is, to leadership, to reputation, and to how you can personally make a difference, you know, in the world. And I think I'm less worried about what people think of me now. And I think I used to be a lot more concerned by that. And I believe that that's quite a positive thing, you know, that it frees me, I think. One thing that I'm doing at the moment, and it sounds a bit weird, but I'm writing a memoir. I have a lot of health issues over the years, and it focuses on a lot of that. It's very, well, I'd like to think it's very funny. But it's also bringing up a lot of memories and a lot of, you know, a lot of times where I've reacted one way or the other in a situation. And it's fascinating to dive into your past and look at it from today's eyes and recalibrate how you see the world and how you connect with it now versus how you used to. Whatever age, you might be talking about a time when something happened to you when you're 5, but you suddenly make those connections and think, wow, that happened when I was 5, 7, and 12. That's really imprinted in me how my personality has developed. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I love that you talk about really deep self-knowledge. And also the use of writing to get there. Yes, obviously that speaks strongly to me. But one of the things that came up a lot in my interviews for We Need New Leaders, in which I interviewed over 40 both emerging and established leaders from diverse backgrounds and identities, was they've done the work. Incredible deep self-knowledge. They know who they are. They know what their values are. There's nothing murky. They have achieved incredible clarity either through doing the hard work or having faced big obstacles, and health can be obstacles too. And through that, they get clarity and empathy, which makes them, I believe, great leaders.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, it's those things that push us and challenge us, and might be negative, or it just might be incredibly difficult. You know, that of course we learn from that, or at least we're supposed to eventually, you know, learn the lesson. And there are lots of lessons that it's taken me 97 times before you learn the lesson. Everybody's like that. You know, you might react to something and learn a lesson, you know, first time round, or, you know, it's set there to challenge you again and again. And I agree with you. I think leaders, I can think of a few people where I'm attracted to that self-knowledge and that clarity, and that almost it's a peace inside. They can be full of passion and they can be driven, but there is also a place inside where they're confident with who they are and where they are in their place in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think leaders who haven't done the work and who may be outwardly confident, but inwardly terrified, and boy, did I meet a lot of those in corporate. Those are the leaders who can be destructive, because they will use up other people's confidence to make themselves feel better.
I absolutely, and I think, you know, the I've been around the block, and I hear you on that. That those are the people that that drain energy rather than bring energy. One of my clients, who I think is a brilliant leader and a brilliant force of nature, is a guy called Jonathan Mildenhall. And I met him when I used to work at this ad agency called Wieden & Kennedy. He was at Coca-Cola. And then when I set up my own company, he moved to Airbnb as CMO. And he was an incredible, magnetic, compassionate, empathetic leader who believed in access and belonging, you know, which was exactly what Airbnb was, you know, building, you know, as a reputation. And I learned so much from him about how you work with teams, how you represent a company, you know, and how you represent yourself in service to a brand. And those kind of leaders I'm very attracted to.
Yes, I am too. And I must say that in corporate, I also met some of those. And so it wasn't all bad, for sure. So, Kerry, you have worked for a very long time as an entrepreneur. You've built businesses. And I'm very interested in how emerging leaders can either land, keep, or create their dream leadership roles. What tips do you have for them? For emerging leaders from diverse backgrounds in terms of really accessing leadership, whether it's within corporate or within entrepreneurship?
I think that's such a good question when you're talking about people of underrepresented backgrounds, and that could be due to religion, it could be due to the color of your skin, it could be due to disability, it could be anything, of course. I would say find your heroes, find your role models, and ask about can you be my mentor? Can we check in with each other once a month? There are people out there who would be delighted to lift as they climb. You know, I've done it. Many, many, many people have done it. And I certainly was a bit, you know, imposter syndrome led for a certain period of my life. And nowadays I realize that it's so important to have role models, and it's so important to be able to communicate and have access to these people. And I would do that. I would find people in other companies. It doesn't have to be in your own corporation. It doesn't have to be in your own field. But find people who you are energized by, and try and open a conversation. And so often you'll be able to do that. And, you know, contacts leads to contacts, you know. That's how I built my business. That's how I built my network. You know, the place to start is to invite people for a coffee. And I'm old school in that sense. I really believe in the power of in-person connecting and in-person communicating and live events, you know. So I would also do that. I would see what events you can attend in your own hometown or in your own city, see what's out there, and talk to people in the audience, talk to people, ask the people who are speaking on stage afterwards, ask them a question, try and get connected with them. And that is one way to start climbing your own ladder. You know, I'm thinking of people that really need to get in. I'm talking about, you know, first level starters maybe. But I think it's so important. Accessibility to opportunity is vital. And I think we all need to be aware of that and to lift as we climb, you know. I think it's fundamental to call each other and our corporations and our companies and our call it our community, whatever your community is, call it to account and raise it to a higher standard. You know, you can't do that on your own. You need to do that as a community.
Lovely answer. Thank you so much. Now to the questions I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
Oh, golly. I have two because I went in two directions. One is my favorite novel. There are two novels that I love. The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. And I think that resonates dreadfully, if I may use that word, at the moment because of what's going on in the world. And I also learned that Margaret Atwood, everything that's in there has happened somewhere in the world. You know, it's not fantastical. It's based on things that have really, truly happened. And so I see too much of the world, and it reminds me of what goes on in A Handmaid's Tale. And it's shocking. And, you know, women in particular need to be aware. My other novel is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, which I think is a beautiful, beautifully written novel. And then one which I wanted to also mention, one book by a guy called Will Gudara, and it's called Unreasonable Hospitality. And he spoke at the Cannes Lions Festival. And I was just obsessed with, you know, his perspective. And it's about the difference between hospitality and service and what that is. And he comes from a restaurant background. He's won Michelin stars, and he's, you know, his restaurants have grown and grown. And he has a huge following, you know, particularly in the States. His book is about, you know, the power of giving people more than they expect. And, you know, it's such a great read. And check him out if you on social media, if you don't know him already. I think that is a really interesting perspective to have on the world that you live in and what is service, what is hospitality, and why is hospitality so much more important.
Yeah, and that takes us beautifully back to being an MC, because what is it if not beautiful, generous hospitality?
I think that is smart. You've clearly done this before, Charlotte. You know what you're doing. You're absolutely right. It's setting the scene, isn't it? And it's welcoming people to your world. And yes, it absolutely is. Why the book resonates with me.
Yeah. Last question. You talked about Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. It's very chilling resonance in the world right now. We all have to look after ourselves.
Yes.
Even though times can be grim. What brings you joy?
What brings me joy? That's such a good question. I like bringing people together around a table over a meal. You know, I really love people coming to my house and, you know, hearty conversation around, you know, across a table, you know, serving hearty food. I really, really enjoy that. I think friends and family are everything. And they, for me, they've become more important the older I get and the more I learn and, you know, the more I see of the world. Also, I have a really, really naughty cat called Troy. He's a naughty ginger Tom, and he's sitting just beyond the microphone here. And it makes me laugh every day. And I think I live on my own, and I think having a pet, an animal, is really important in the world. You know, looking after something or someone is really important. And so that brings me real joy to share my apartment with Troy. He probably sees it as I'm sharing his apartment, but, you know, that's still to be discussed.
So I'm hearing food, family, friends sharing around a table and enjoying the antics of a wild ginger cat.
Perfectly summarized.
Kerry Finch, thank you so much for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.